Welcome to the Angus Table, the podcast from Angus Australia. I'm Scott Wright, the CEO at Angus Australia. Each episode will bring conversations with breeders, industry leaders, innovators, insights, stories and ideas that matter and hopefully add value to your Angus operation. Whether it's genetics, markets, pasture management, marketing experts or people shaping the breed, this is where the Angus community pulls up a chair at the Angus Table. Thanks for joining us. Well, welcome, Brad, to the Angus Table. Great to have you along. I'm interviewing today Brad Huang, and it's his third day on the job at Angus Australia. He thought it was good for the members to get to know Brad, but many of them will know you, Brad. Great to have you along.
Thanks, Scott. No, I'm really happy to be here, so pretty excited about this new role. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
It was excellent to have such a great welcome. I think we put it on social media that you're joining and had 195 likes and about 30 comments in no time flat. It's probably got more since then. So obviously, you know, a lot of people know you, and I received a lot of messages actually just saying, how do you get Brad? So that's a nice, that's always nice. And I think the team here have been really excited to have you on board. I know Nancy Crawshaw and Hunley Jensen were really enthusiastic to have you join the team. So welcome on board.
No, thanks very much. Very much looking forward to it, Scott. So.
Brad, you're no stranger to Angus people and Angus cattle, and you've come from CSIRO. Yeah, tell us, go way back here. Tell us a bit about your career and your background. Where did you come from, Brad?
Yeah, so born and bred in Armidale, actually, Scott. So I'm an Armidale local. Went to school there in Armidale, and then very shortly after leaving school, started with CSIRO and started as a youth trainee a long time ago, 1993. Worked as a technical officer there for a long time in lots of different areas, actually, which was really good. So did a lot of work in parasitology, did a lot of work with fine wool project, beef CRC days, sheep CRC days. And the really good thing with working with CSIRO is you have the opportunity to do some study that if it's related to what your work is about. And so I was very fortunate that CSIRO allowed me to study. So started with a TAFE diploma many years ago that's really specifically for technical officers. So a very practical hands-on course, which I really enjoyed. That led me to a science degree at UNE here at the local university. Then did an honours project out at CSIRO and actually did my PhD at the CSIRO. A little while ago now, so I finished that in 2008. And it's my focus there was really on immunology, so specifically on ruminant immunology, so in sheep and cattle. And specifically my project was on sort of transfer of antibodies into colostrum in cows. So that's what that was all about. Once I finished my PhD, I actually was encouraged to go and venture into a few new opportunities, having been at CSIRO for a long time. So that was really good. So I went to the University of Guelph in Canada for a year and a half, worked there. So some fantastic people over there. And there's, I worked in the immunology area, but as you guys would know, there's a very big genetics group there at Guelph. So I got to interact with people there. Met Steve Miller while I was there and he certainly looked after me with furniture for houses and things like that when I started. So was at University of Guelph for about 15 months, and then I went to Ag Research in New Zealand for a couple of years. And that work was all in dairy cattle, so I'd never done much work in dairy before. So that was a new experience. About 2011, I actually come back to CSIRO as a research scientist then, and have sort of worked there over the last 10 years. Main focus in animal health type research, and what I've really enjoyed over the last few years is interacting with our genetics genomics guys that work up in Brisbane. And so have been really interested to work on some projects with those guys. And obviously during that time, we've, had some really good collaborations with Angus Australia. The crew here has been fantastic to work with. And that was, one of the things that really attracted me to come on board here.
Oh, that's great, Brad. I think what's quite encouraging from my perspective is you're a textbook case of coming through the system, aren't you, from trainee to TAFE to university degree, then postgraduate study. I think it's very hard for young people sometimes to go on and do postgraduate research study. I see that we get a lot of overseas people come, and especially in the animal field, which is great, but it's very encouraging to see someone that's come up through the ranks to do that. What do you see from that angle? Do you see many Australian born and raised kids on farms interested in that sort of PhD study?
Yeah, I do. And there's some really good programs out there, which I think, especially young kids off the farm need to keep an eye out for. It's a lot of scholarships with places like CSRO and other places. And places like CSRO are very keen to attract those kind of students because they already have that link with industry and understand the industry. And for young researchers, that's a really important attribute and something that, I personally have tried to work very hard at getting those young people that experience out there in industry. If you're working for an industry, you really need to take the time to learn something about it. There's lots of opportunities there and really encourage anyone to sort of go down that path because, the whole research world really needs those type of people that have those industry connections and combine that with the research and you can go a long way, I think.
Yes, yeah, no, that's right. And if someone's listening today, we at Angus Australia, we support young people too in this study and there's a range of scholarships and opportunities as well. So any of our younger members should look out for those. I guess, Brad, you were very involved in the creation of Immunedex, weren't you, and some of the research that went behind that, which has been successful. Yeah, tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, so I guess when I went over to Canada for a postdoc there, I worked with Bonnie Mallard and Bruce Wilkie over there. So they've been working on the immune competence concept in dairy cattle for a long time. And the real idea is to try and identify animals that, have a really good immune system that's able to cope with disease challenges. And it doesn't really target specific diseases. The aims are real, is very much a general disease resistance. And so when I returned to Australia, we thought there's a real opportunity to do this kind of thing in beef cattle. So, took a lot of those learnings from my postdoc in Canada, and then we applied some of those methodologies to start to assess immune competence in cattle. And I guess one thing that really stood out, when I started to do the research around this is, there's a lot of indicators out there showing that if we select really hard for productivity and sort of don't consider health and fitness traits, there is a consequence. And, we've seen that play out in some of the really intensive industries, like pigs, poultry. I think we're in a good spot in the beef industry in Australia where we haven't got to that point yet, but there is a risk if we keep driving hard for productivity and leaving these things off the radar that we will get to a point where it starts to compromise the, animal's ability to cope in their environment. So it seemed like a really good thing. What we really concentrated on here in Australia is to make the methodology to assess animals as practical as possible. I always like to go to the practicality and work backwards to make sure where we're heading sort of fits what industry do. We actually have worked with Angus Australia from the outset in that project, and we'd always, because it is a very hard to measure trait, which is largely why people haven't tried to tackle it in the past, it was really important to use animals that were really industry relevant but were genotyped and extensively phenotyped, because we're interested in those relationships between immune competence and other traits. So the ASBP project just fitted into that perfectly. So we started way back in cohort 2, started looking at animals and obviously over time we were always working towards some sort of genomic prediction for the trait. And it's been really good to see we've got to that point where we've, done enough animals, and it was really only through collaboration with Angus Australia we were able to achieve that. As researchers, we can't access that kind of information, to have the phenotypes and the animals. So to be able to run alongside the site benchmarking project was really key to getting to where we've got to. So that work continues today. And as you'll know, we've got research breeding values for ImmuneDex. We're doing similar work we've done a lot of work in sheep as well, and it's progressing, and hopefully it'll go down the same track as the cattle work. It's a little bit behind at the moment, but it's catching up. But I just think it's one of those traits that, we will never say to people to select solely for ImmuneDex, but what we encourage people is always that balanced approach. To me, and a great outcome would be to hold the ImmuneDex value, if you like, while we continue to drive productivity. If we could even do that, I think there's a big benefit there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's a pretty rare opportunity to have your knowledge set come into the society and to EASL Australia. So if members are at all interested, I guess, to have a chat about, hand incorporating ImmuneDex into your breeding program, I'm sure you'd be happy to have a chat.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yep.
Brad, so a bit of a change. So a lot of research over your career. The big footprint there. What made you make the change to go, look, now I'd like to spend some time in extension?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I guess obviously been in the research area for a long time now, and I guess I just felt like I got to a point in my career where I wanted to then work on, getting that research out there and helping producers adopt the good things are coming out of that research setting. So I guess I just had got to a point in my career where I just wanted to switch gears a little bit and work more on the adoption side. And, as a researcher, my favourite thing was always out talking to producers anyway. So it was a logical thing for me. And, it probably drove my bosses mad at CSIRO that I would avoid scientific conferences like the plague, but be very happy to go to a field day at a property. And I've always enjoyed those interactions with producers, and it's something that's really helped me mould out the research that we do. So, I guess for me it was just a logical progression to do something that I really enjoyed doing. So, moving on from the research, a lot of my role at CSIRO in more recent years has been helping the younger generation. There's some fantastic young researchers coming through, but help them, get their links into industry and encourage them to talk to industry and just help them, mould what they're planning to do so that it fits into industry needs. So, I guess for me, extension's what I'm really passionate about. Even when I was in research, it was that part of it that I really enjoyed.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. And it's a great timing to come into Angus Australia. Over the last 3.5 years, we've tried to really build the member engagement side of Angus Australia, and we've had some great operators in this space. Jake Phillips, Lindsay Crawshaw, Humley Jensen. Yeah, it's been a great great journey. There's been a lot of others involved in assisting and pushing that forward. So I'm sure the next chapter will be great to see the impact. And it's very unique. We've got, I guess, 2 PhDs that are now working with producers. We've got more than that in the business, but we've got yourself and Liam, which are great cattle people and great resources that can really teach people how to apply some of those learnings. So,
yep,
nice chapter going forward. Woody, you've at Chiswick at CSIRO, you've got an Angus herd there. That's been part of the ASBP. You've done a lot of research there. Yeah, what's your observations about Angus cattle and the Angus breed, Brad, over your time of interacting?
Oh, look, we've been in the benchmarking program for probably 5 or 6 years. I think maybe 2020 we started. It's been incredibly beneficial for us at Chiswick for several reasons. I guess I looked at the genetics of our herd, and we only talked to Harley about this morning, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and you could see that, we weren't tracking as well as we could be. And it's interesting, a place like CSIRO, we're very fortunate that we've got a farm team that does a lot of the day-to-day work with the herd, and then you've got the researchers. And we've been really fortunate at Chiswick that you know, we've got a really good farm team that works really closely with the research group. So as well as benefits for us from a research perspective of having access to animals which are, you know, truly industry relevant is really important. You know, I think when you, if you're doing research for that industry, you need to be doing it with the right animals. Joining the benchmarking program, as I mentioned, especially with the ImmuneDex, it opens up, you know, all that data that can help us with our research. But from the farm side, what's been really terrific to see is just the significant improvement in the genetics of that herd. And that's really, you know, providing financial benefits for the farm team, completely separate to the research. And it was only a couple of weeks before I finished up at CSIRO, I actually plotted out, you know, just the increase in the breeding index of our females that are coming through year to year. And it was really, you know, it was really impressive to see the gains there. So, you know, just from outside that, you know, I think Angus has just done a terrific job in that genetic space, you know. The progress in Angus cattle is phenomenal over the last 20 years. You've only got to look at the data to see that. And, you know, Angus cattle have got a really good following because they are very, very good cattle. I mean, it's just as simple as that. They perform. We see that all the time. And, you know, I think the Breed Society is a big part of keeping that momentum. So, you know, to me, Angus has got a really bright future. So working for Angus Australia, you know, pretty attractive option for me.
Oh, that's good to hear. I often talk about it's a balanced breed in terms of...
Yes.
You got the female component and the terminal carcass component, and it's it is a magic combination that that's really what's driven the success in those Angus cow calf operations. Any warning signs? Do you see anything that you think as an Angus industry we should be paying attention to? Any red lights on the horizon?
Oh, I don't know about red. I think it's that whole ability of animals to cope in the environment. I mean, and I'm not just talking about immune competence here, I'm talking about a lot of things, you know, heat tolerance, ability to cope with any sort of stressors. Those kind of animals are really going to stand up in, you know, as we move forward. And we've seen in other industries, and I'm not saying that Angus is there, but, you know, where they've, you know, the North American dairy industry was a good example. They've been very hard on milk production for a long time, but that had pretty significant consequences for other things like reproduction and health. And so for me, it's that balanced approach. It's 100% that balanced approach. Productivity has always been the forefront of people's minds because it needs to be, because, you know, we get paid on kilograms of beef. And the quality of that beef we produce obviously has a big impact on that price as well. But I think increasingly as we see things change, you know, just in our local area here, we're seeing diseases here, you know, with a incidence of 3-day sickness here in the New England. Never heard of that in my lifetime. So animals are just, I think the message is we need to be considering we've got to be breeding resilient animals as well as productive animals. And sometimes people think they go hand in hand, and they do to some extent, but that relationship breaks down when we push animals right really hard. So to me, it's just, yeah, any of those resilience traits, I think we just need to be giving some more consideration to.
Yeah, okay. No, that's some good thinking. We've started measuring methane, the SBP and other projects. Obviously, it's a bit topical at the moment with the chat around Bezos and the newest Angus members. How do you see the space changing, I suppose, in that carbon-centric world going forward? Mm. What are you hearing out of that, I guess, research community? What are you, not so much the politics, but what do you think we need to be aware of as Angus breeders in terms of maybe methane or carbon efficiency or how we manage our farms going forward? Mm. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of talk about these topics, and, you know, myself, like others, it can get a bit confusing at times because there's a lot of mixed messages that come out of there. I mean, to me, you know, for any of these things, having those animals productive so they've got a smaller, the footprint of those animals is really important. So, you know, an animal that's in and out of the system, if it's efficient, the more efficient, the less. That to me is a really important part of it. So I think, you know, obviously the methane's a really important thing for us to be working on, and which we definitely need to be working on. And you know, combining that with those efficient animals. So, you know, the growth and other traits that allow animals to get through the system quickly with a smaller footprint, feed efficiency, all of those kind of things, I think, are really important in that space as well. So I guess we talk a lot about methane and it's super important, but, you know, we need to be thinking about those other traits that will work with reduced methane output to reduce that footprint of animals. You know, there's other traits that really will come into play as well.
Mm.
I think that's right. Until we get data, we don't know sometimes what we're dealing with, do we? And
yes, yep.
Good cohorts of data. Have you observed, and sometimes we get chatter from the like the DPI community, other communities, that government has changed its focus on where they put research dollars. Have you seen that trend at all, away from, sometimes the criticism of government is they've moved away from efficiency traits, like production traits, to more back those sort of projects like methane. Did you notice that at all from your perspective?
Yeah, there's definitely more research dollars going into that sustainability type area, however you badge it. You know, I often talk to people about sustainability, and one thing for me is, you know, for an industry to be sustainable, at first it must be profitable.
Yes.
You know, that's something that we lose a little bit sometimes in these sustainability chats, you know. I only talked to someone about this the other day that sent me a presentation they'd prepared for producers around sustainability. I said, the first message you've got to give is, you know, the most important part of being sustainable is you need to keep people in the industry. So that's just something that we probably gets left behind a little bit. So, yeah, a lot of research dollars, and, you know, that the sustainability angle is obviously very important and will continue to be very important. I guess it's just considering there's a lot of things that contribute to that sustainability angle that we probably don't think about some of those things sometimes, but can have a pretty big impact on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. The biggest driver really needs to be farm profitability to keep people farming.
And if you haven't got farmers, then the sustainability will, it becomes a secondary question if there's no one in the game.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Back to your career, Brad. Not specifically the career, but have you had good mentors in your journey? And you want to, anything you can share or talk?
Yeah, for sure. And it's pretty relevant you mentioned that. It was something I talked to my supervisors at CSIRO in my exit interview. Is it's one thing that, you know, I've been very fortunate to have a couple of really good mentors from my career. So Ian Colditz was one, Aaron Ingham more recently after Ian retired. And you know, even back in my very early days, Andrew Swan, Laurie Piper, I've always had a bit of an interest in genetics, even though it hasn't been my real research focus. I've always had an interest in that. And so in my early days at CSIRO, you know, people like Andrew Swan, Laurie Piper were always willing to, you know, always more than happy for you to pop into the office and have a chat and talk you through things. So, yeah, I mean, Ian Colditz then and Aaron Ingham more recently, I'd say, have been real mentors for me. But you really can't underestimate the influence of good mentors. And it's something I flagged that we really need to be careful with our young scientists coming through, that they're aligned with a good mentor. And they don't even need to be anyone that works in the same field. That's not what it's really about. It's mentoring beyond that. It's so, yeah, very, very important. And something, you know, I've certainly tried to do through my career too, because I've always understood the importance of those good mentors. So, yeah, something that you can't underestimate. I actually listened to a very famous immunologist when I was in Canada that presented this very good talk, and one of the things that he was asked, and this is a guy, Donald Capra, that's had thousands of students, and one of the grad students asked afterwards, you know, what's been really key to the success of the students you've had? And he said, they're mentors.
Well, yeah.
Simple as that. So, you know, that really hit home for me, that, you know, and I've seen that firsthand, but you can't underestimate the value of a good mentor, I don't think.
Yeah, fantastic. Brad, in terms of getting to know you a bit. Always like to ask people what values are important to them. Yeah, what about you? What's important to you professionally and personally?
Oh, yeah. So I'm I'd describe myself a pretty loyal person and, you know, have trouble with people who aren't. But I'm very loyal by nature. I'd say I'm a pretty honest sort of person too. And definitely, you know, something I guess that's been instilled with me from my parents, probably I'd say I've got a pretty good work ethic, you know. My parents have always worked very hard all their lives. So, so that would describe me. Very much value family and friends, you know. It doesn't really matter what else is going on. They're really important. I guess that would sum me up pretty well.
Yeah, good. No, they're good values to have.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. How do you relax a bit, Brad?
So relax. So we have a little farm. So we've just got 350 acres at Kentucky down the road. And so my favourite thing, and people think I'm crazy, but my favourite thing on the weekend is to go out and fence or spray wood or something. You know, just something where I can go. I don't have to think too much. I just go, enjoy the day, and do the thing. You know, people think I'm crazy because I spend so much time fencing. But it's a real escape for me, you know. So for me, strangely enough, relaxing is building a fence or something like that. So I really enjoy the stuff, you know, the farm and the kids, you know, working with the kids on the farm. So, you know, I've always said to people, our block's big enough to be a pain but too small to make any money out of. And it's probably a pretty accurate description, but it's a joy you get out of doing it, I think.
That's great. Very like-minded, Brad. We've only got a small operation as well, but it's great on a Saturday. Go and look at some cows where the phone doesn't ring.
Leave the mudball phone.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I often get pulled up by the kids because I generally leave the phone at home if I'm out. And, you know, Dad, I tried ringing you three times to come and help me. My son, Harry, just the other weekend rang me because there was a heifer having trouble calving and I was up the back paddock spraying some weeds and so he had to go and do the job and couldn't get me in. I said, oh, mate, I just don't take the phone on the weekend. Yeah. Sorry, mate.
That's probably good.
Yeah.
Good habit. All of us could have done.
Yeah.
Excellent. Brad, in terms of what do you see as some of the things coming up for the beef industry that we might have to tackle or be aware of as the next... Next dimension. What do you think of some of the keys?
Yeah, it's interesting, the whole consumer perception thing. Something I've been, so I did quite a bit of work with a thing called the antimicrobial mission at CSIRO. It's really interesting, you know, the whole beef industry is really working hard to reduce reliance on use of antimicrobials in animals, and especially in Australia, we do a fantastic job, you know. Like, it's very highly regulated. People are very, you know, we've got excellent antimicrobial stewardship in our feedlots, et cetera, in Australia. I guess for me what's always been, not a worry but a bit of a surprise, I guess, is sometimes there's a real disconnect between what the science says and what the customer perceives. Yeah. And unfortunately, perceptions are a dangerous thing, and sometimes, you know, you've got to address the perception whether it's a reality or not. So I think we've just got to be a little bit, as we go forward, you know, some of them things, you know, customer perception are some of the things that we do and whatever that we know, you know, there's no issues there, but if there's a perception there, you know, we really need to address it sometimes, whether it's real or not. And I think the antimicrobial story is one of those cases, you know. That was the whole preface there is consumers being concerned about the use of antimicrobials in livestock impacting on human health, you know, the super bugs in hospitals. But there's very little, if any, evidence to suggest that there's a real issue there. But it doesn't, you know, unfortunately, consumers still perceive an issue. So that's just one of the examples. So I think sometimes, even though, of course, I'm super science-driven, that's what I do, is we've got to sit back sometimes and just think about the perception as well, because it can be a dangerous thing.
Yeah, okay. No, that's, and I guess your career in Indian-related issues has probably formed a big part of that for
you. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, as beef producers, the welfare of our animals is paramount, you know. I've never been to a beef producer that hasn't been worried about the welfare of their animals. It's just, it's inherent in everything they do. So, you know, a big part of the work I've been, you know, I would say the most important role of the work I've done in the research space is to try and give producers tools so we can reduce that reliance on antimicrobials, but at the same time, not impact on welfare. You know, we can pull things out of the system, but if it impacts on welfare, we know I'm going to do that. So the great thing is the industry is very proactive at wanting to, you know, to work on this. So it's always been something that's been well supported, but yeah.
Excellent. Brad, you're a beef producer as well as a zoonotist. You've probably had lots of opportunity to go to different conferences, workshops, get your information from a lot of sources, probably like myself, a bit more privileged to some information than others. If you're a beef producer and could be in New England or Western Vic or Western Australia, what sort of conferences would, or workshops, or having seen quite a few, where do you think you'd head if you're a producer trying to get relevant information?
Yeah, look, I actually did a presentation at the Feeder Steer School in Armidale just earlier this year, and I thought that was a fantastic event. I'd probably had an earmark to go to for a long time and hadn't quite got there.
Yeah.
What's really nice in conferences like that is where you bring a mix of, you've got producers, researchers, and, you know, some of the research funders all in the one room. And I've had a little bit of experience with that through SALRAC. So that's, you know, the Southern Australia, the Livestock Research Committee, which I sat on while I was with CSIRO. Is some of the really good workshops or things that we had was where you bring those three groups together and they all present together, because you get that really broad perspective on, you know, everyone gets a say. And you learn a lot from those types. So for me, any of those conferences where you get that combination of, you know, producers, the researchers and the research funders, that's it. They're really good place to go, and you learn a lot from those type of conferences, I think. So the Feeder Steer School was a really good one. I really enjoyed it. So I thought they did a really good job there.
That's fantastic. Well, hopefully we've gotten the right job to help us put together some good events going forward. I often like to ask people, are they readers? I assume you've read more than you care to, you know, in your role over the years. Any books that stand out for you as being must reads?
Oh yeah, so I'm not actually I read a lot of stuff, but I don't read for pleasure, I hate to say.
Yeah.
And my wife chips me about that pretty regularly because she's a pretty avid reader. And that's something I've encouraged my kids to do, but I'm pretty ashamed to say I've probably never read a book cover to cover for pleasure, which is not ideal. Read a lot of scientific articles, which is probably not good. But, yeah, I guess I'm one of those, I'll think about something and then I've got to go and read it so it's clear. So I could spend a lot of time chasing things that I probably don't need to chase, but I like, yeah, I'm very inquisitive in that respect. And yeah, so the last couple of days here have been fantastic, but gee whiz, it's given me some reading material, which I won't be able to put out for a long time because I love to read all that kind of stuff. But
that's great.
Yeah. So I haven't got one for you, sorry.
No, that's all right. No, that's good.
That's pretty sad, but I haven't.
There's a lot to digest here coming into this role. I don't know how you go with that, but I think I'm told there's 1,800 pages on the website of information, which is great, and we've got to make that accessible. So I hope we haven't overloaded you.
No, it's all good.
What would be, I guess, one of those gold nugget bits of wisdom you'd pass on to maybe even someone our age, Brad, or but a younger person in the Angus industry, or could be in another field. But yeah, is there any gold nuggets from Brad Hine?
Oh, to me, I think it's just, you know, what I've got the most out of is listening to a diverse range of people. You know, sometimes you'll talk to someone who actually knows nothing about, I'll go back to an example. My PhD was a really good example. I had a principal supervisor at UNE in the chem department, knew absolutely nothing about what I was doing because I was working on, you know, colostrum transfer in cows. Like, but I would say they probably had the best input into that thesis because they come from a completely different area. So I guess what the message is, don't underestimate talking to someone completely out of your field or from a very different background. Sometimes their perspective on things can really open your eyes to a different way of thinking. And that's something I've seen a lot through my research career, I guess, is where we've had some really good projects come together is from interaction of some people from really diverse backgrounds, because they'll start to get you to think about something you would never have thought about before. So for any young person, and, you know, if you're in the beef industry, well, don't be scared to go and talk to someone in the crop industry or the sheep industry or whatever industry. I guess it's just expanding that horizon and interacting with people outside of your normal remit can be really valuable, and you can get a lot out of that. Don't underestimate what someone might teach you that doesn't know anything about what you do.
Yeah, that's great. I remember going out to Narrabri and meeting with some cotton researchers and producers and very switched on business people, and they were saying to me, they said, we don't understand you people in the beef sector. Why don't you adopt every piece of technology quicker? And
yeah,
and it was an interesting thought process of the dry flame, but the cotton industry has been, they've been great at uptaking technology. If they get a 1% win, they fake it.
Yeah.
So it's, you're right, looking over the fence is good.
Yeah.
Brad, you might want to answer this one. What's your biggest challenge of your career or biggest mistake you've made, and how did you overcome it?
Oh, biggest challenge. organization like CSIRO, you know, I guess the biggest challenge for me is I'm the kind of person who wants to change things, and sometimes they're out of your control.
Yeah.
So I guess in a big organisation like that, you know, at times I could get quite frustrated with the system. And that was something my mentors helped me through. Sometimes you just got to learn to work with the system rather than fight the system.
That's a lot of organisations.
That's a lot of, and it's, for me, you know, I like to address things and make a difference, and I guess that's been a bit of a challenge for me. In an institution like CSIRO, as you imagine, lots of government institutions like that.
Yeah. I'd concur completely. Great therapy is to go and watch the shorts from Yes Minister. Yeah. Very funny.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I'm operating in these circles that we do, actually have a little smile if I find myself living Yes Minister. What about, what would be your proudest moment, do you think, Brad, looking back, and you just started a new chapter from the last chapter, what's one of your proudest achievements?
So from a research perspective, you made
all? Any, yeah.
Oh, well, you know, kids obviously come out on top. So that's from a personal experience, of course. I was really glad to get to where we did with, you know, it's a long road with a meat index, for example, to get to a spot where you got a genomic prediction. Like, you know, it's probably 10 years work into that. And I guess I was really thankful for all the help. You know, when you're developing a trait, I'm very much on the phenotypic measuring end, whereas you need those really good people on the genetics end to help you deliver. And I was pretty fortunate at CSIRO to have a really good genetics team there that really allowed us to take it to a spot where it could be adopted by industry. So I guess that's probably, definitely from a research perspective, that's probably, you're always proud when you see your PhD students make their way through. So I had quite a few students, you know, some of them have gone down a pretty tough road. So, so that's really, really good to see. So, and just seeing some of those, you know, you see some of those really bright young students come through and work their way into the ranks, and it's really good to see. It's what keeps you in the game.
That's great. But both those things, I think family is always important. It's almost a value, isn't it? Your family relationships. And a fellow helped me understand that Angus collection, really, of family, call it Angus family, yep. Angus breed. But one of the things that sets, I think, the breed apart is from other breeds and other production systems is it's all based on family,
yep.
Family farming businesses. And that's really important.
Yeah.
It's not always the case with other breeds, whether they're more business focused or in the north with pastoral operations. But I think our breed is full of Angus families making money off cow calf operations. That's great. And I think the other thing that just stood out then when you said about the 10 years of research into Immunodex, we're just such a fast-paced society now. And I think we need to remember that they're big slabs of time, real change, aren't they? And I think that's incredible that, yourself and the organisation devotes a decade to getting a really positive outcome.
And it is a real challenge in the research world, I think, these days. It's very hard to get support for really long-term projects. And we can understand that because, the people who are providing the research dollars need to show, value for money in short periods. But, some of that work that will require that really long-term focus is much harder to get support for that kind of work these days. And that's at no fault of anyone. It's just where things are gone. But, for all the things we do, it's a pretty long road, really.
Excellent. And look, probably the most important question of the podcast is, what's your best beef eating experience that you've ever had, Brad?
Oh, well, that was probably... a year or so ago, I actually took a bit of time off CSIRO, needed a break, and spent a bit of time working for Jim Neverson down at Ohio North down here. So Jim's a big producer, very good at what he does, and I just loved working down there. I was working on the farm. It was fantastic. I just loved every day. But I remember Jim, for Christmas one year, bought us some Angus. It was Marble Score 4. Was just a big Cryovac cube roll. And I remember we took it. We actually went away with the kids over Christmas and we took this and we ate that every night for, I think, 4 nights. It was just so good. So
beautiful.
It was fantastic. So, yeah, I've had some really good steaks at restaurants, but that with the family, and you all sat down, it was just, it was beautiful bit of steak. So
fantastic.
Very partial to a good bit of steak. And that was pretty good.
What's your favourite cut? Doesn't have to be one of the...
No, it's probably... I like T-bones, which people are a bit surprised by. But if I go, I always buy a T-bone. I like a T-bone. I don't know. I don't know necessarily why. I just think there's something with meat that's cooked with a bone in. I don't know. But I'm a T-bone fan.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I don't know.
T-bone mushroom sauce every day of the week if I could. But,
That's great. That's perfect. And Brad, as we finished up, any final message for our members? Anything you'd like to say we haven't covered?
Oh, look, I'm just super excited to get out and chat with members and, talk with people. And, it's just super excited. So really looking forward to it.
Excellent. Well, I hope our members see the Angus you drive up their driveway soon. I hope we had a funny experience with one of our other extension staff. Some very passionate Brangus breeder had taken upon themselves to buy a letter B and an R and put it in front of the Angus on the back of the tailgate, and that caused quite a stir. So I'll
keep an eye out for the tailgate.
Watch someone hanging around your tailgate with stickers, black stickers.
Yep.
Anyway, that's that. Look, absolute pleasure to have you on today, Brad. We're all excited about the next chapter. You've got some great colleagues to work with. We trust you'll keep Nancy Crawstrature in check as she promotes New Zealand. And, we think you've done a great job. Team's excited. And if anyone would like to chat with Brad, call the office. The number will be on the website. Get in touch. I'm sure he'd love to have a chat. And, thanks for joining the team.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Angus Table. We look forward to bringing you more conversations that support your success in the Angus breed and your farming operation. I'm Scott Wright, CEO of Angus Australia, and today's Angus Table podcast is produced by Mel Strasberg. Until next time, all the best.